Today, I intend to be focusing on the Vision Quest and the Sundance, paying attention mostly to the ways in which Black Elk described these ceremonies of the Ogallala Sioux. I am Ed Senny from Valparaiso University, and the thing I do at Valparaiso University much of the time when I'm not pushing papers like a department chairman administrator is to try to help my students understand religions other than Christianity, to try to understand that and to find ways to appreciate the faiths of other people. And so only one part of my repertory is Indian things, and I by no means profess to be a specialist in Native Americans or even in Native American religions, but it is one more piece of the larger puzzle. What is the religious response of human beings throughout time and throughout space, and how do we find that? What do we make of it? That's what I care about. I want to start by giving you a capsule statement from Black Elk about his theology, if I can find it. There it is. He says, "We should understand well that all things are the works of the Great Spirit. We should know that he is within all things, the trees, the grasses, the rivers, the mountains, and all the four-legged animals, and the winged peoples, and even more important, we should understand that he is also above all these things and peoples. When we do understand all this deeply in our hearts, then we will fear and love and know the Great Spirit, and then we will be and act and live as he intends." That one little statement with "he is in all things and at the same time he is above all these things," so that he is neither the one nor the other. Last week one time I went into a big speech about immanence, the being within, and transcendence, being beyond the creation. He is both, they want to say again. And so they can meet the Great Spirit in each part of his creation. Now some other prayers. These prayers, in particular from the section that we were doing, some of us were paying attention to. I mustn't make the supposition that we are a class that has the same attendance every day, but some of us were looking at the Sweat Lodge ceremonies yesterday. And there are just a couple prayers that I think reveal this spirituality in another dimension of it. "O ancient rocks, you are now here with us. Wakantanka," that's the Great Spirit, "has made the earth and has placed you next to her. Upon you the generations will walk, and their steps shall not falter. O rocks, you have neither eyes nor mouth nor limbs. You do not move, but by receiving your sacred breath," the steam in that sweat lodge, "by receiving your sacred breath, our people will be long-winded as they walk the path of life. Your breath is the very breath of life." There is a winged one, there where the sun goes down to rest, who controls those waters to which all living beings owe their lives. May we use these waters here in the Sweat Lodge to put on the rocks. May we use them in a sacred manner. So that word to the birds, the thunderbirds that bring the rains and thus the water to this world. O you people who are always standing, who pierce up through the earth and who reach even into the heavens, you tree people are very many, but one of you has been especially chosen for supporting this sacred purification lodge. You trees are the protectors of the wingeds, for upon you they build their lodges and raise their families. And beneath you there are many people whom you shelter. May all these peoples and all their generations walk together as relatives. Another passage. I don't know what you're thinking about right now, about this talking to the rocks, talking to the trees. But after what I said a minute ago, maybe that's okay. Wakantanka puts a bit of himself in all that he makes. The leader now sprinkles water on the rocks. We're inside the sweat lodge again. Sprinkles water on the rocks, once for our grandfather, once for our father. These are grandfather Wakantanka, father Wakantanka. Once for our grandmother, the potential of Earth, and once for Mother Earth, as she keeps giving forth the new creations. And then once for the sacred pipe. This is done with a sprig of sage or sweetgrass, so that the steam will be fragrant. And as it rises and fills the little lodge, the leader cries, O Wakantanka, behold me, I am the people. In offering myself to you, I offer all the people as one, that they may live. We wish to live again. Help us. Myself for all the people. That solidarity, that unity and community. And that's what it's for. Never do we pray or worship just for ourselves. It's for ourselves, but not just for ourselves. It's with one voice, the birds, the trees, and all the people, the Wakantanka, one voice. The vision quest now. I don't apologize for going back to that sweat lodge, because that also is the introduction to the vision quest. You can't do the vision quest until you are purified through the sweat lodge once again. What? That's a bright, that is my light. Yeah. Okay.
I can plug in the, see if it can plug in the lighting.
You mean that one up there? Yeah. For my, yes, I'll need a little. Let's see what we have here. We'll let you meditate on that a little while. Yesterday we talked about this picture a little, but I wanted to come back to it again after we talked about the sacred pipe, which gets used so much again in the ceremonies we discussed today. See the sage, see the sweet grasses growing. See, as Wakantanka brings the gift of the sacred pipe, which will be a means for offering prayer, a means for meditation, a means to express our harmony with each other and with all creation, and how the buffalo woman comes to bring that gift to the people, for it comes from Great Spirit through the buffalo to us, as our life comes from the Great Spirit through the buffalo to the people.
It's interesting that a woman brings it.
Uh-huh. I think it is too. I want to affirm that statement, but I have no further comment about it. But it's really important. And also that in all the prayers in the same breath, it is grandfather, father, and grandmother, mother. In the sacred is the element of both. Mm-hmm. Now, I can see, okay, here now. The vision quest, who does it? The men and the women do it. I'm reviewing a couple slides here. Men and women have been doing the vision quest, which Black Elk calls crying for a vision, crying. Or he also allowed the translation of that Oglala word, or that Lakota word, he allowed the translation lamenting. Lamenting for a vision. This is crying out as in desperation on behalf of the desperateness of all humanity and my own. Crying out, lead me, guide me, give me the vision. That's the crying for a vision. Here, the sweat lodge is again the preparation for that. Before, if you wanted to do the sweat lodge, the vision quest, it's something you would decide to do. Now, in the olden days, it was apparently customary for most of the young men, for all of the young men, I guess I might as well say, to do it somewhere ages 11 to 13. So it was a pre-adolescent or early adolescent rite of passage into another stage of life. It was time for them to kind of get a handle on which way their life was going to go. And so they sought a vision that would become a large clue or a large plot for what their life might become. And so they went through it that way. But that use of it only in the beginning of one's adult years is not the only use for it. It is also something that they might do many times. Black Elk suggests that Crazy Horse did it over and over and over and over. And that's why he is regarded as having been a man of such great vision that he was able to lead the people as he did. So a person decides to seek a vision and then goes to a holy man and requests his aid. There is no way to seek the vision without the aid of a holy man. And so here is an example of how one might go. It's a kind of ritual approach to a holy man, and it's discussed like this. I wish to lament and offer my pipe to Wakantanka. I need your help and guidance and wish you to send a voice for me to the powers above. To this the old man says, it is good. And then they leave the teepee and walk a short distance. They face the west, and the young man standing to the left of the holy man, and they are joined by any others who may happen to be present, all raise their right hands, and the old man prays, holding the stem of the pipe toward the heavens. Grandfather Wakantanka, you are first and always have been. Everything belongs to you. It is you who have created all things. You are one and alone, and to you we are sending a voice. This young man here is in difficulty and wishes to offer the pipe to you. We ask that you give help to him. Within a few days, he will offer his body to you. Upon the sacred earth, our mother and grandmother, he will place his feet in a sacred manner. And then on, they pray to all the powers of the four directions and so forth. So the holy man helps him that way to get started, and then he has to make a choice whether he's going to lament for 1 day, 2 days, 3 days, or 4 days, and the longer the harder. It is a time of complete fasting from food and drink, and a time to go out and be alone under the elements, without food or drink. So to say 2 days is a pretty ambitious thing already. To say three, to say four is taking upon yourself a very difficult challenge. So he picks the length of his quest, and then they set a time when it will happen, the next full moon or something like that. And in the meanwhile, then, the instructor, the holy man, instructs the person what materials need to be gathered. He already knows that, but there's a ritual instruction about what needs to be gathered. He's going to end up having to have all the materials to build a special sweat lodge first for that ceremony, and he gets all the materials for the sweat lodge ceremony, and then special willows and sages and the kinnikinick for smoking the pipe and the sweet grass, and then he has to gather some little small sacred trees, cherry trees that will be taken up to the mountain. And he has to have the buffalo robe and the pipe and all the paraphernalia. He and his family will dedicate themselves to getting that. And boy, they'll be in their pickup trucks running miles and miles around South Dakota until they have it all together and have all the relatives informed that it's going to happen. And people will start coming days ahead of time and join the family. And there will be a lot of people involved in this one person's vision quest. And I'm saying that to emphasize once again, the one and the many are inseparable. What looks like a very individualistic religious rite is really involving everybody in their prayers for prayers of support and assistance for that person. And that person in turn will be praying always for all my people that they may live. So they gather the materials. Then they do the ceremony of purification. And then from that, a little passage also that I think is helpful to get the spirit of this. As a little water is poured on the red rock, hot rocks, we're now in the sweat lodge, as a little water is poured on the red hot rocks, all the men sing, "Grandfather, I am sending a voice to the heavens of the universe. I am sending a voice that my people may live." As the men sing this, and as the hot steam rises, the lamenter cries, for he is humbling himself, remembering his nothingness in the presence of the Great Spirit. And then pretty soon, the lodge is opened. The lamenter now embraces his pipe and cries out over and over and over, "Great Spirit, be merciful to me, help me." And then he passes the pipe, and each of his partners reaffirms that prayer. "Be merciful to me and help me." Then they will go to the mountain. There he is with his holy man guide alone in preparation. And there he comes forth now purified for what he is going to do next, to go on the vision quest itself. There are a lot of people involved, as we've said. They come to the base of the mountain, and he waits. He has his buffalo robe. He has his sacred pipe. He wears a breech cloth. He probably still has his moccasins at this point, although I don't believe he's got them on right now. Three of his helpers go ahead, and on the backs of those animals are all the paraphernalia that will be needed by him at the top of the mountain where the vision quest will take place. They go ahead and prepare the special place. So at the top of the mountain, they will first select the right place where you can see in all directions if possible, and they will pick a spot which will become the center. Center of the world, Wakantanka's place, and there they will plant a pole, and they will put rocks around that pole, and that will become the place where his head, whenever he rests, he will work from that center. That is Wakantanka. And then they will draw a line out to the place of the rising sun, a few paces, 10 paces or so. And there they will put a cherry tree. And then to the west, 10 paces, and there they will put a cherry tree. And then to the north, and then to the south, so that the corners of what will become now a square, the corners are in the cardinal directions. Then they will tie, of course, the cherry trees. It's traditionally the month of the blackening cherries, which would be, I believe, July. They'll do it a lot of times of the year. I better not make too much of a point of that. But they do like to use those cherry trees for this. Then they will tie strings from corner to corner, connecting the cardinal directions, and the whole thing ends up looking like it has about 3 strands of strings and looks like a boxing ring. And on those strings are little tiny bags with knick-knick, with the smoking tobacco. And so you have them like you have these little bags tied up for weddings of rice or grains. It's they apparently look like that. They tie them all up. All the relatives, the women of the family, have been making these for 4 or 5 days because they knew that their cousin was going to be doing the vision quest. So then those strings are all covered with that. And then there are feathers put here and there to remind us of the eagles. That's the kind of preparation of the place. It is a universe again, with a center and the 4 cardinal directions, and the planting, the plant people, the feathers of the winged people, the buffalo hide of the 4-legged people. It's all there again, so that the whole universe joins in the lament. Show me the way. Have mercy. The lamenter then goes up the mountain barefoot and naked, at most a breechcloth, and maybe not that, but carrying the buffalo robe, which will be the cover in the night hours when it gets cold, or when the thunderbirds might bring storms, and this will protect him a bit from the rain storms that could come. O Great Spirit, be merciful to me that my people may live. That's the short little prayer as the helpers have come down the mountain, and alone, barefoot and naked, he ascends the mountain to be just what he is before God and to seek the guidance. The praying that goes on up there is a combination of praying with the pipe, offering the pipe to the 4 cardinal directions. You start from the center with a prayer, walk toward the east, the place of the rising sun, with a prayer, offer the pipe and pray to the powers of the east. Go back to the center, then walk to the place of the south, praying to the powers of the south, invoking them to join you in the one voice to Wakantanka. Then to the west, and then to the north, and the lamenter must repeat that all day and well into the night, must wake up at least one time in the middle of the night and do it again at the time of the morning star, and then keep doing it throughout the day. These ritual prayers in the 4 cardinal directions. Now, the instructions about how in the world you might get guidance out of this whole thing. I think that this little passage helps us to see what that might be like. He prays all day long, constantly, either out loud or silently to himself. For the Great Spirit is everywhere. He hears whatever is in our minds and hearts, and it is not necessary to speak to him in a loud voice. The lamenter need not always use this prayer that I have given, for he may remain silent with his whole attention directed to the Great Spirit, or to one of his powers. He must always be careful lest distracting thoughts come to him, yet he must be alert to recognize any messenger which the Great Spirit may send to him. For these people, those of you who haven't been with us, people could be an ant, four-legged people, many-legged people, any kind of people, not just human people. For these people often come in the form of an animal, even one as small and as seemingly insignificant as a little ant. Perhaps a spotted eagle may come to him from the west, or a black eagle from the north, or the bald eagle from the east, or even the red-headed woodpecker may come to him from the south. And even though none of these may speak to him at first, they are important and should be observed. The lamenter should also notice if one of the little birds should come, or even perhaps a squirrel. At first, the animals or winged peoples may be wild, but soon they become tame, and the birds will sit on the poles, or even little ants or worms may crawl on the pipe. All these people are important, for in their own way they are wise, and they can teach us two-leggeds much if we make ourselves humble before them. The most important of all the creatures are the wingeds, for they are nearest to the heavens and are not bound to the earth as are the four-leggeds or the little crawling people. That gives you some idea how. Now, through the behaviors of these animals, these insects, these birds, through the rumbling of the sky, through the dream that comes in those little times when the lamenter places his head against the center and feet to the east, through the dreams that come, clues, symbols, that can be translated finally to become guidance, a vision of what life, that particular life, is to become. Vocational counselors deal with things like that, I guess, nowadays in different ways. Well, at the end of several days then of this, the helpers will return to the mountain. In some accounts I have read that they may, after a day, just come near and see whether he's all right. But when the time is up, they come back to the mountain to take the lamenter back down. And they go back down to the sweat lodge again. Let me see what I have ahead of us here. There, on the top of the mountain. The framework is not clear there about the strings with the offerings and so forth, but we just have a lot of variations on these themes, and I don't know how to explain them away. The buffalo robe in the foreground here, and the obvious praying to the powers, I guess, of the morning star there. The little cherry tree in front of him. The moment the pipe must be sitting against the center pole, like that. And the animals are there. And so then they go back to the sweat lodge for a debriefing, I will call it. They go back into the sweat lodge, the holy man, one or two of the helpers, and the lamenter. Then in smoking the pipe, he makes the vow that he will say only what is really true about what he experienced. And then together they will put together the clues. In this particular account, there is suggestion that a message came through a bird. Crying, I returned to the center, and then when I went towards the place which we always face, that's south, I saw a red-breasted woodpecker standing on the offering pole. I believe he may have given me something of his wochangi, translate influence. Everything in God's creation has its influence, a little power, and it can influence us, and it communicates influence, wochangi. So he felt that he was being given something of that bird's wochangi. For I heard him say to me very faintly, yet distinctly, be attentive. Be attentive and have no fear, but pay no attention to any bad thing that may come and talk to you. So that's one of the little things he had to report then, is what that bird had said to him. I think that I can leave the topic of vision quest at about that point. If you want to get into what a vision might be, some of the great people have had great visions that have been then eventually, after their lifetime was over, they have been told. But you don't tell the vision. It's too sacred to spread it around and tell it. It's a private thing between you and your spiritual guide. So all the people that helped have to be satisfied not necessarily to know what the vision was that the person received. But as we look for spiritual parallels in our own kinds of lives, I think I've given the clues. I think they're pretty obvious. We seek the guidance of God, not in exact ways like, should I do precisely this or precisely that? Not so much that, but the calling of God into a direction for our lives, into an overall pattern, an overall challenge of accomplishments for our lives. And if you want to read into a great man's vision, read Black Elk Speaks, learn about the vision of Black Elk and what he hoped for the flowering tree of the nation called Oglala Sioux. You try to live it out. You try to find the ways to make that dream, that vision of life unfold. It's big. It's a large panorama that draws you. And you may go back into vision quests again to clarify it, and it gets built upon, added to. It would be of no use for other people to know that. But the way in which it is for them is that the prayers that go there are for them. The love that is in that quest for guidance is not simply that I may have a good life myself, but that my people may live. Always the prayer that my people may live. So they're going to help them go there and pray that our people may prosper, may be full of the life of the Great Spirit. So they don't really need to know the vision in order to profit from that and to feel a part of it. Yes.
Is that vision then as a gift to the people ever under scrutiny? For instance, if this person behaves in such a manner that it looks as though he doesn't have a vision, is there moral judgment upon a person for being non-visionary, or do they assume they all have a vision and the vision is out among them?
A Black Elk had difficulty with his vision in knowing what to do about it. It was a vision to bring to life the flowering tree of his nation, a depressed nation, the Oglala Sioux. And there were times in his life where he wanted to forget it. And he went away from his vision, tried to forget it, tried to just live whatever life an Indian could live. In the reservation and fooling with white folks and doing things for white folks and the Wild Bill Hickok show and things like that. But it just haunted him. It kept coming back. There were times when he had forgotten it where his holy guide would nudge him and remind him, not real harshly, not real judgmentally, but knowing that it had to get to him again sometime. He'll come back to it sometime. Parents of young people, visions that maybe have been there, and the young people seem to have gone away from the vision for a while. Somehow, just that care about, they will somehow maybe come back to parts of that vision, to all of that vision, something. Yeah, that kind of thing. Yes?
When he goes back to the sweat lodge and brings that vision, is the medicine man or holy person there to help interpret that?
Yes.
To help interpret it
to make as much sense as can be made out of it at that point. And they are supposedly, because they are have the reputation of holy men, they supposedly have some spiritual wisdom of their own that might enable them to see the symbolism in the dreams and the visions and all these things that are brought together and help to paint the picture of what it would be. You shared with me a couple things to make a connection with from a biblical tradition to this kind of tradition that I thought was kind of interesting this morning. Share it with us, please.
This didn't tie in exactly with the vision quest, but you were talking about the plant people and the four-legged people and white buffalo calf woman and how the Creator spoke to the two-legged people through a woman who had been a buffalo and then went back to the buffalo. And they mentioned the burning bush yesterday, and it hit me that God spoke to Moses through a burning plant person. And that got me thinking, and I thought about the prophet who was fed by a winged person, raven, and the Holy Spirit who appeared as a winged person, dove. And Adam and Balaam were spoken to by the no-legged serpent and the four-legged donkey. And I think it's in the Psalms that talks about trees clapping their hands and rocks crying out. And so it hit me that there is all kinds of pictures in Scripture that are really quite similar to some of these things. And you said the Christians thought it's ridiculous that a buffalo would become a person who would share with them and then go back. And I thought, well, I guess the donkey was ridiculous too. Mm-hmm. But even in our own tradition, we have that.
We have forgotten some things, but we are connected.
It isn't difficult for children to believe that. I was taking a walk with my 4-year-olds, there were about 20 of them, through the campus early spring, and the leaves were just coming out. They were bright green. And one little boy said, "Oh, look, Mrs. Edmund, the trees are all smiling at us."
I was trying a few years ago to teach my little boy, who's 10 now, was about 6 and a half then. We walked along the Grand Canyon, and everybody's oohing and awing about this great, gaping, beautiful hole there. But there was one little flower right beside where he was standing, and I said, "Did you see that?" And I talked to it a little bit, and he's up there. I says, "Well, I thought it looked lonely, and I wanted to say thank you because it was so pretty and it was just smiling up at us." And once in a while we tease about that when we go walking in the woods, and I'll bring that back in more of a teasing way. But I hope he never forgets that, and he probably won't ever forget that there may be that kind of possibility too, that we speak those things that bless us.
To just reemphasize, I guess, the vision quest idea that it is a very personal thing, and that all through life the person tries to work out, if you will, God's will in his life. But that's very important in the life of the community, the clan, the tribe, whatever you want to call it, that they're tied together. And so when you emphasize that, not being important for the community to know,
that's the particular roadmap.
Yeah, that's really true. It's not important for them to know, but it's important for them to live that out, because it does make a difference in the community.
Because the living it out is for the community, isn't it?
Something else I was thinking was, you mentioned grandfather, father, grandmother, mother. And I thought, we have father, son, and Mary, in a way, is an earth mother. She is someone created of dust who becomes mother to the Son of God. And so there's some of that parallel.
And the early people of Eastern Europe especially were pretty good at seeing that. and pulling that together. Yeah, it gets pretty stark in Protestantism sometimes, as you lose, hardly ever mention her blessed name. Yes, Dennis.
In order for the universe to be perfect, does everyone have to follow their vision so that if I rejected my vision, I would be jeopardizing everyone?
Well, I don't like to say I don't know too often. I like to say, I have to say it so often that I'd rather not. My impression is that the people are not very judgmental about that. There is the positive side of drawing people into these kinds of things to pay attention, to live it out. There is a kind of sadness about the fact that it's absent, or that concern for it is absent, that people aren't doing these things anymore, or they do it but they don't seem to care much about it. And there is sadness about it, but there's just not a tendency that I've been able to pick up to be just judging about it.
Don't they love St. Paul?
To scold a little, you mean?
Yeah.
Oh, they might have somebody that can do the scolding.
Don't, some Puritan influence?
I sure don't want to romanticize them. I do it too easily anyway, to the extent that I take away their humanness, because they could be nasty, mean people to each other as well as anyone else could be, and they didn't always respond like they should have to their environment. But I like to put the best construction on everything and to draw out those things that can be a blessing to us to know about and can make us love them and affirm them in those things, at least. So I imagine they had some nasty scolders around.
Mysticized that when you said they were rounding up the people in their pickups for me.
Took you out of the romance, huh? Would horses have been better? pickups are their new horses. I'm going to want to share just whatever I can with you about the Sundance. Yes, let's take a comment here first.
I was just thinking, as you're talking about the community involvement and how each person would pray, but would pray for the nation or whatever. And I know in studying the Hebrew tradition before Christ, that was always hard for me to understand, because we live in such an individualistic society. And yet, so when we look back at Hebrew scripture, I'm always being reminded that they had more of that mindset, that each individual action really involved the whole community, and the lamenting was for, even though some psalms were written in the first person, that really they could be used by the nation. There's some kind of a parallel there too that I don't sense our society is good at understanding.
That's right. Well, of course, we wouldn't have to have the example of Native Americans to call us back to the priority of the concept of community. But it is helpful, I think, to turn to traditional societies like those of Africa and those of the Native Americans, because they do it so well. But the biblical tradition, New Testament and all, clearly says, I am because we are. I am who I am because I belong to a people, the people of God, the baptized family of God, or however we're going to go with that image of community. But so it's not the biblical tradition that has lost it, but the church, as it is affected by a very individualistic culture, loses some of that vision, and we have to really work to call each other back to our connections with each other. The Sundance. Let me share a few things about that. The Sundance is done by many of the Plains Indian peoples, but once again, I'll follow mostly the Oglala Sioux people and the people of South Dakota. This is a book called simply Sundancing at Rosebud and Pine Ridge. The Rosebud Reservation at Pine Ridge Reservation. And Thomas E. Males has put together observations and studies and photos in this thing that are just a treasure store that I haven't had anywhere near a chance to sort out yet. But that book was popping up all over the Badlands, and every time I'd go to a new store, I'd realize I paid $2 too much for it. At about $11.95, I paid for it, and I saw it at $9.95 later on. But it's quite a collection, and it looks pretty good to me. And pictures that make some of this come alive about what the Sundance is. But here we have at least a few of Drysdale's illustrations. The Sundance is a spring or summer event. Used to be an annual event. It's now once again become an annual event in many of the communities of the Oglala, or of the Lakota people in general, I better say. It's done at the time of the full moon, and it is done in the moon of fattening, which is June, the full moon of the month of June, or the full moon of the month of cherries blackening, which is July. It is a time of renewing. It is a renewal of the seasons. So if New Year is the beginning of a new season cycle, the cycle of the coming to life again of the world in spring, so it celebrates the coming to life. So it is a renewal of the seasons. It is a renewal of the cosmos, the four cardinal directions, and all the order and structure and meaning of this beautiful universe of peoples that we have been reciting about. They are all renewed by this ceremony, a time of renewal, and a time of renewal of the people. A people as community, as well as particular people who have a special place in this year's Sundance. It is a time of sacrifice. So it's renewal and it's sacrifice. Sacrifice of oneself for certain people who will take vows and who will be the pledgers, the ones that will do the painful dancing in the Sundance. So big crowds go, but certain are the ones are the pledgers. They will hurt themselves in their prayers and in their dancing for the sake of the people. But it is intended to be a taking upon oneself symbolically the pain of the whole nation. And believe me, you know what the pain of the nation is, the depressed state of reservation Indian people. And they take that pain upon themselves in a chosen physical form of cutting, piercing, and so forth, which I'll describe later. They call it offering our bodies and souls to Wakantanka as thanksgiving and as prayer. Really, what else can you offer? The only thing we even really have that's ours, maybe, is the voluntary offering of our pain, of our own bodies. Everything is his. That's the way one person has explained it, at least. Identity is the third thing I would say. Renewal, sacrifice, identity. It's a time to confirm once again that I am one with my people. We are Lakota. We are one with all humanity, and we are one with all the creatures, with all creation. I don't know about the rest of you, but I keep wanting to break into Herb's song, you know, which is our song now, Earth and All Stars. All in the words of praise. It's a time then when it's been announced, it'll be on billboards all over the place. The date's announced. Underneath it says, you know, no cameras, no tape recorders, no notepads, no alcohol. And so they come. And the crowds, all the bands gather together and pitch their tents around. And nowadays live out of the back of their pickup trucks and their campers and all of that. And there are just thousands of them gathered around for the Sundance occasion. During that time, regardless of the central ceremonies that are going on, namely the Sundance, there will be social dancing all day and all most of the night, I guess. And the drums keep going. And the drumming in the tradition The drumming is the heartbeat of the universe. And so when you dance with the drumming, you are putting yourself in the rhythm of the universe, tuning your heartbeat and your body to the heartbeat of the whole cosmos. That's what they say. And it goes too fast for me sometimes to feel like I can tune to that. But that's the, always in the mind of people who've been instructed about what the drumming is really for. And it can become, I know, especially certain beats I can really get with as a meditational device. Very, very helpful as a meditational device. So there is social dancing. It's a time when traditionally young girls get their ears pierced. So it's a big occasion. It's a time for courting, for families to make marriage plans together about their young people. It's a time for everything that you can imagine when the whole bunch gets together. But meanwhile, there is the special thing, the sun dance itself. There are the preparation of ritual objects, eagle bone whistles with feathers tied to them. So the feathers of the eagles and the eagle bone whistle will be used in the dance. And that connects the dancers with Wakantanka in his manifestation as eagle, the high-flying, watching all kind of winged one. Otter skin necklaces with a pendant hanging on it. That is a circle with the cross through it, the cross meaning the four cardinal directions where it touches the circle of the pendant, and at each point where the lines touch the circle, a feather, a plume in the middle. So the center and the four cardinal directions, you wear the pendant of your oneness with the whole universe again. And things like that. Crescent moon is made from rawhide, reminding us of the birth-death cycle that the moon goes through monthly and we go through also, and everything goes through. The five-pointed morning star, which is the guide between darkness of night and the light of day. A rawhide circle painted red, which indicates the face of the sun. Another rawhide circle, that same circle with a small blue circle in the center, which is Wakantanka in the center of the universe. Another circle which is all red, which represents the earth. Another circle which is all blue, which represents the heavens. A rawhide buffalo form, like a cookie cutter would cut out, you know, making rawhide buffaloes to hang on things, to wear around your neck and so forth. So the dancers and all the poles around the Sundance place are going to be decorated with all these cosmic symbols, which keep it all right there for us all the time to call our attention to our connections with it all. Then there's the ceremony, and now finally I get to this slide that's been in front of you for a long time. The ceremony of selecting a special tree, which is the cottonwood tree it's supposed to be, because the cottonwood tree has all sorts of symbolism about it. Fold the leaves of a cottonwood leaf a certain way, and you have a teepee. And so Black Elk says that the cottonwood tree has taught us how to make our homes. So that's one, a whole bunch of symbols that they find connected with the cottonwood tree. They have to select just the right one, a great pole, because it's going to be cut down and taken and planted in the middle of our sacred circle. And it's going to be the axis mundi, the connection between heaven and earth for us there in the center. Once the scouts, now we're going to get military language, the scouts have found the right tree, they come back and report in a ritualistic manner, singing this song and that song, and then they all go back together and they pray with the pipe around the selected tree, and then an innocent young woman, an innocent maiden must symbolically do the first cutting, and then the chiefs who go do certain kinds of cuttings. Finally, the tree is cut down. But you see, they're counting coup. That's a military kind of thing. Heroics of war. against the tree. And so in a certain sense, as you can see from this, to take the tree down is to take it captive. And I can't unfold all that symbolism. I don't quite know why this, that, and the other gets connected with it. Then they will take it down and strip it and bring it back in a ritual manner, in a military ritual manner, to the village where the site for the circle has been selected and the hole has been dug. And you see it is not to touch the ground, so they got it propped up on logs, and they are now, with prayers, tying things onto that pole. Cherry branches at the top, some rawhide strips will be tied at the top, which will hang down below, and this image of a buffalo on that, image of the moon, and some of these other ritual objects. They'll have that all tied on there, tobacco. Put tobacco in the bottom of the hole. The whole thing gets connected with the universe again. And then finally, erect the pole. Around that pole, then, they will build the 28 poles that make up the circle, with the opening in the east, the entrance here in the east, with the buffalo skull around to the west, but facing the east. Buffalo, their life. The skull bears the essence of that life. And so the 28 poles around and support poles, the center pole, and they will decorate it then with other kinds of branches, cottonwood branches and things that they'll make almost little shelters around the outside so people can get shade as they sit around watching the dancers and the drummers and all this that goes on. Then comes the making of an altar, and I just can't go through those details. It's very detailed about how the altar is made with the Mother Earth and the buffalo skull and the ribbons that are tied to it for this reason and that reason. Very symbolic, beautiful. A little pipe rack that's there then so that the sacred pipe is held on the rack and such things. Then comes the issue of the sun dance itself. They go to the sweat lodge to prepare the pledgers, especially the ones who are going to take vows to God, to dedicate their lives to God and to the nation in a certain way. And it's a way of dedicating yourself to the nation, and you better live out a kind of life of leadership after that, or you probably would feel pretty guilty, because the privilege of being able to suffer on behalf of the nation is yours at this time. So preparations in the sweat lodge and in the preparation teepee. Lots of beautiful prayers that I, of course, said to myself I was going to read to you, but I can't always. Then they have to choose the form of their sacrifice. One way to sacrifice yourself is to simply be tied to the top of the pole with these rawhide things, and then they will have the ceremony of piercing. Take the flesh here, and with a stick, make the piercing, and then tie the rawhides to that, and sometimes four, two in the front and two in the back at the same time. And then to dance against that pole with that back and forth, always moving, always at the same time blowing the eagle bone whistle, keeping connection with Wakantanka that way. These are the unpleasant parts of it, of course. Then there's another form of sacrificing, tying buffalo skulls with raw hides to skewers like that on the body, dancing until it breaks the skin out. And then there are ways of cutting little quarter-inch pieces, not too deep, of flesh and offering pieces, 8 pieces of flesh or 12 pieces of flesh. There are about 8 levels of sacrifice. Now, we don't like things like that because they say it must be done, or it needs to be done, or it can be done as a way of taking the pain of our nation upon ourselves willingly into our own bodies and experiencing it as a suffering and as a release of freedom. Our flesh is ignorance And I get a little Gnostic here at times. Our flesh is ignorance, and to be break the flesh and be freed is to break the bondage of ignorance and to come into a wisdom and light. So then there will be body painting, and there will be the dancing, and then after they have succeeded in all this, the eagle flies over and blesses the whole occasion, sacred pipe in the front. Isn't that powerful? And the dancer, I'll let you go in a second.
Yeah.
And the blessing of the pledgers who have accomplished this now, they're the heroes of the community for the time being. And the eagle blesses the whole finished product. I must adjourn the session at this point, and there's always more to talk about than we have time to talk about. So thank you very much for your interest.